Building the fashion businesses of the future together. Welcome to the future of fashion business. The future of fashion business is about helping aspiring fashion entrepreneurs and designers start their own successful fashion brands by learning from the best, most experienced people in the industry. I am your host, Esteban Julian. For more advice and to learn more about how I started my own fashion brand, make sure you follow my fashion journey on YouTube at Esteban Julian. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Future of Fashion Business. I am your host, Esteban Julian. And on this week's episode, again, a very, very good episode. You know me, and if you don't know me very well, I'll let you something know up front then. I love having guests that are involved with sustainability and responsible practices in the supply chain of fashion. Now, it's a topic that I am personally extremely passionate about that I know for sure a lot of you guys out there listening to are extremely passionate about. So I do try my best to always get guests that are somehow involved in the sustainability movement. I've been lucky to have a couple before, and I was very lucky to have the guest that we have today. Now, our guest was Ebru Debag. Now, Ebru is the executive director of global sales and marketing at Surti, a massive denim textile company based in Karachi. Now, we had an incredible conversation on potential technologies that could disrupt and are disrupting the entire supply chain and manufacturing space for fashion to make our world a better place. It was an incredible conversation on technology, blockchain, and not only that, you know me, you know I like my listeners to have some sort of tangible advice after each episode so they can actually start building their own strategies and applying them in their fashion businesses. And then so that's why in this episode, I also asked Ebru for some advice on how to actually get in touch with manufacturers that have responsible practices, how to start as a designer building a sustainable fashion business so you can guys have some sort of direction on where to go next if you want to build a fashion brand that is responsible. That being said, I hope you really enjoy this episode. It was a really, really good one. And I will see you guys on the next episode. Hope you enjoy. Great, Ebru. I really appreciate you being here. I know I thanked you beforehand when you were having this short conversation on the travels you were doing in Madrid. But I really appreciate you being here. I'm sure my audience appreciates you being here as well. I know you're a busy lady, so it's a pleasure to have you on.
It's a pleasure being here, Esteban, having this talk with you. I am more than delighted to share all the insights that we're going to talk about with our audience.
Awesome, awesome, love it. I love the attitude, even after the long journey, guys, okay? So you can really appreciate Ebru's effort here, please. Now, Ebru, I'm sure, I actually don't know if you managed to check any of our previous episodes. I actually have sort of like a structure to my podcast where, as I mentioned, I like to start off with my guest's story in the industry just so that can people that are listening at home or traveling to work, wherever the audience is listening, can know a little bit more about the guest that I have on. So can you just give us a little bit more background on what your story in the industry actually looks like, and how it all started?
Yeah. Sure. Actually, my industrial experience started when I was five, because Whoa. My family, yeah, yes, my Whoa. Family, yeah, my family had a store in one of the little towns in the Mediterranean region in Turkey, selling children's clothes. So over the summer period, I would always like kind of hop them around in the store, and I kept doing this during my primary and high school years. And then I kind of got a lot of liking into fashion. And I actually studied textile engineering. And then I embarked on a journey with denim and worked for a Turkish company, a denim manufacturing company, for 27 years. So that
very,
was
very little,
like,
very little time.
Yeah. Actually,
just 25% of 100 years.
Yes, almost three decades. And I was always very curious about how this industry would evolve and the global network that the denim industry could build, as well as I considered the fabric itself like a blank canvas, which was coming, you know, it had a great history, and then, you know, so many possibilities with add-on technologies. So I lived through all the evolution of the product itself, as well as the whole industry. Back then, when I started working for this Turkish company, there were only like two hands full of denim mills globally. And now it's more than 600 mills being built, 20 mills being built every year in addition.
Well, I mean, Turkey is one of the leading denim manufacturers or out there. Because I mean, most of the luxury companies are starting to switch most of their production to places like Turkey, specifically for denim, right?
Yes, actually, it's you know how the denim industry evolves. Actually, there's initially the denim fabric producers being set up. That is really very investment intense structure, and then with all what's happening at the retail right now, all this speed to market models also enable further garment manufacturing industries to evolve together with the denim mills. So that's what happened with Turkey over the past, I would say, 10, 15 years. Initially, it was a couple of denim mills, and then we saw the whole garment manufacturing, which was really like fashion conscious, and also the additional industries are developing in Turkey as well. Currently, it's almost around 600 million meters of fabric production out of Turkey annually. And mainly for re-export to Europe as well as to the US. So back 4 years ago, I actually set up my own venture called Indigo Friends out of New York. And my whole idea was that I wanted to relay my experience into the supply chain in addition to exponential technologies that other industries were picking up much faster than our industry into denim.
So, what sort of technologies were? Just give me for example.
Mainly blockchain because of a track and trace kind of structure, as well as more biological based solutions, and more of the digital solutions. Back in 2012, I did the Singularity Executive course. And that intrigued me even further to kind of see the denim industry as an access to even the problems that we are now facing globally, like, for instance, the climate crisis. So this fashion industry, because it's an emotional industry, I would say, from a consumer perspective. So the purchasing decision is emotionally made. So with a lot of the restructuring we can introduce, as well as the information we can give to the consumers about this vast industry, we can co-create kind of like solutions to impact our climate crisis as well. It's a global spread supply chain.
How does blockchain technology, because I'm sure a lot of the listeners don't even know what blockchain technology is, how does it actually get linked with helping the environmental issues that are happening because of, as you said, just this fast consuming?
Yeah, what I realized, consumers as well as most of the designers as well as the sourcing decision makers in the industry do not really know to differentiate what is, you know, ethically produced and sold from what is not so ethical. So
there's no transparency, pretty much.
There's no transparency, and the information is quite vague. So the consumers cannot differentiate. Most of the consumers don't read labels. So mm-hmm. even if they read labels, you know, you have to still put the whole fiber content, you know, how the fabric is made into a context, as well as the garments. It's not easy. It's very complex structure. So the whole traceability as well as transparency idea, which has been introduced into the industry for the past 5 years, I would say, I think could be sold through blockchain applications. So the blockchain application actually does not verify that the initial information that is mm-hmm. put on a ledger per product is necessarily true, but you know that's what we have to assume, that the companies, the responsible companies, for instance, details like with the fiber content, because that's the most important one for, again, climate impact. Yes, mm-hmm. for climate impact. So even like the social attributes as to who produced our garments mm-hmm. could be actually put on a digital cell, which through a QR, QR reader on a smartphone, the mm-hmm. consumer can have an access to. So this has been introduced.
That's interesting. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Actually, that was introduced 5 years ago.
Yes, this technology already exists. What is different in the blockchain concept is that the consumer gets an incentive. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, the consumer who's linked into this, let's say, the network of blockchain of purchases, mm-hmm. it could develop into a loyalty program and mm-hmm. drive the consumer behavior towards ethically, sustainably, awesome. Responsibly produced apparel. Yeah, I consider blockchain as kind of like the next internet, and it's a ripple effect. Once it becomes hype, everyone will tap into it.
Wow. And can you sort of give us a rough description of what blockchain actually means, just so that people, because, you know, blockchain sounds straight up like it is a tech word, but it sounds like something out of a physics book, you know, and probably like fashion designers are not very educated on what actually blockchain means. They should be. But just for those people that have no idea what it means, what would you say blockchain means?
It's actually a decentralized kind of verdict information, let's say, on a product. Mm-hmm. So let's say you walk into a store, you see a pair of jeans, and you scan on your smartphone the QR code on the jean, and you get the full information. So that information that you have access to, if it's registered on the blockchain, which is a digital platform, if it's registered on the blockchain, it cannot be tampered with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the industry is looking into ways to not put the QR code on the label, but maybe put it kind of like on the product itself, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like a coating, maybe a QR code that's really embedded into your jeans is possible. So that information and the manufacturer can put as much information on that digital cell as possible, which then, you know, I mean, we could even say your jeans was produced by Alan, you know, in so-and-so country, and that person gets such and such wage of, you know, salary. So all this is possible. It's again, it's a digital cell, a unit that mm-hmm. you can reach from anywhere globally, mm-hmm. and that represents a full historical information on the product.
Yeah, so it's a technology that allows a customer to know everything that they need to know about how the product was made, from the raw materials to the shop that they're shopping at, so they can know exactly everything that happened to make that product a reality. They can make a better, more informative decisions on if they're actually purchasing products that are either sustainable or not sustainable or just anything in general, right?
Exactly. And we can drive the consumer behavior with this information.
Mm. Yeah, because it's incentivized, you said, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
Wow, that sounds right. And how come, if this technology has existed for 5 years, you know, I know 5 years is pretty much nothing in the grand scale of things, but when it comes to technology, 5 years is, you know, it's not new then. So how come, because I had no idea this existed. So how come people, consumers, are still not aware that these things are available? Is it because the technology is not fully developed? Is it because it doesn't have enough brand awareness, or is it because it's not branded? Is anything, what's sort of the issue there?
It's multiple, I think it's multiple issues. So mm-hmm. we will see, as of 2019, we will see more blockchain applications. Mm-hmm. It's not easy for brands to adapt this because, you know, I mean, the brands have a vast manufacturing geography. Yeah. So they would kind of need to reach out to every single manufacturer and remember whatever information you put on the blockchain needs to be verified. Mm-hmm. So coming from a manufacturer point of view, it's easier because mm-hmm. once you can seal your unit to be responsible, or let's say in progress to be responsible, you can offer a responsible verification on your product. So mm-hmm. it actually started with the brands. Most of the blockchain technology companies approach the brands, the retailers. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the manufacturers who are going to initiate the whole application. So we will see more of the more of this happening in 2019. I know that Levi's, for instance, in collaboration with the Harvard University, is mm-hmm. launching a blockchain application more mm-hmm. for social impact, the mm-hmm. workers' wages compensation scheme. Mm-hmm. I know for sure that Tommy PVH Group is working on a blockchain application, as mm-hmm. well as most of the premium brands, more for authentication purposes, are working on blockchain possibilities.
And it's all for the same purpose of informing the customer, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. That's awesome. Wow, that's incredible. And I'm guessing, and this is for people out there that don't know, that when you have already an established business in the fashion industry, you already have so many moving pieces that are making the business work, that if you just try and put something that can have so much of an impact and make so much of a difference in the business model of this type of technology, things could really go get out of control, if not even, you know, explode. So you're saying that that's one of the biggest reasons why it hasn't been able to enter the market as freely.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and do you think people that are starting out, so people that are just starting to develop their own brands, have a better opportunity to integrate this sort of technologies? Or as you said, it has to go through the manufacturers first before people, entrepreneurs and retailers, up and coming retailers, can actually start implementing these technologies efficiently?
Well, actually, direct to consumer brands like the Everlanes, Bonobos, Old Birds, these mm-hmm. companies already are doing this. Not using the blockchain, but if you walk into an Allbirds or an Everlane store, you know, all the direct-to-consumer brands are actually giving the consumer in-depth information about their supply chain mm-hmm. as well as their products and, you know, their lineups in front of these retailers. Yeah. Because there's the consumer, we see that there's definitely a interest in more responsibly produced goods, and also mm-hmm. the consumers want to know what goes into their products. So mm-hmm.
awesome. And obviously you don't work for Allbirds, so you probably have no but how do they communicate that if it's not with this sort of technology? Is it by just content and
very visual content, beautiful mm-hmm. simple communication, and mm-hmm. lots of social media integration. Mm. It's beautiful. You should check out one of their stores. It's really very informative, very engaging, and very simple.
I definitely will. Well, guys, if you guys are listening, don't forget to check out Albert's website. I hope I can get them on the podcast someday. I've tried so many times, but hey, I can't get too ambitious and too arrogant about it, right?
And now, we'd like to take a quick commercial break to thank our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by Your Social Component. At Your Social Component, we help fashion and e-commerce business owners automate and scale their online sales using the best online advertising strategies out there. If you're looking for a marketing agency that completely understands your industry and can scale your fashion and e-commerce business to the next level, make sure you get in touch through our website at yoursocialcomponent.com. Now let's continue with this week's episode.
Now, because I'm fascinated about this topic when it comes to technology, especially from a manufacturing perspective. So I'm trying to understand, is this the main technology that you see having massive impacts within this space, or is there some other ones that you see a lot of potential in?
That's one of the technologies, and I think tech is definitely automating the fashion designer, as styles become more personalized and influenced by digital signals. So AI can learn an individual style and create customized computer-generated images of new items that fit that style. So we will see, again, more of the AI integration for customized products going into retail as well. From the manufacturing point of view, the whole industry is being disrupted because, you know, I mean, again, going back to the fact that we are in an era of climate crisis, where 10% of the carbon dioxide emissions and 20% of the industrial wastewater is coming from the global textile industry. We have lots of problems on hand to tackle through manufacturing processes. So water is definitely a very big issue. And the whole denim industry is being disrupted the way that the jeans are being washed at the industrial stage. So what used to happen is that you would get stone wash and permanganate applications, which are becoming, extinct, I would say, because the water, we need to definitely save the water. So the laser treatment has been widely used for the past 5 years in the denim industry. And I think the stone washing would even be replaced with better laser applications, which will take the water use out of the industrial washing applications. And this will mean that we will have to go back to how we make even the denim fabric and start. It's a key unlock project because not all the fabrics currently are laser friendly. So the manufacturers will have to develop laser-friendly fabrics that later on could compete well in the laser application. It's mind-blowing to watch the laser application.
Is there any YouTube videos?
Oh, yeah. I'm curious. Yeah. That you would come across many YouTube videos on this one. You know, take a look. It's mind-blowing because you put a pair of jeans into the laser box, and you see the flames coming out, and all these like breakages, destructions on the jeans, you could actually achieve through lasers now.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, and very cool to watch.
And what a, because I'm trying to think how people listening, because I'm sure everybody nowadays, especially if you're an educated designer or and somebody that's educated in the industry and wants to start anything, that being a a fashion brand or retail business, or you want to get into the manufacturing industry or the manufacturing space, they all want to start doing something that's friendly to the environment. Because again, the awareness is starting to grow.
Sure.
And that disruption is going to happen eventually. It's an industry that's getting disruptive, but how far away are we, from your personal opinion, to actually having a supply chain that works the way it should be?
We're actually far, and we're not fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that breaks my heart to say, but we're not fast enough. So last week, actually, you know, one of the better news that Inditex Group actually made their declaration, one of the fast fashion brands, one of the biggest fashion brands, Zara, Bershka, you know, all of the other brands actually they have under the Inditex family, have made their declaration that they will become fully sustainable by 2025.
Mm-hmm.
They have their Join Life program in stores, and they are seeing that their customers, their consumers, the millennials, are gearing towards the ethically manufactured and sourced Join Life programs.
Mm-hmm.
But I doubt if they have already a strategy laid out to really achieve the 2025 goal, or if this is just a declaration
marketing
made
purpose.
Yeah, with the marketing purposes. I mean, I know for sure that they will be geared into this direction anyhow, because the millennials, you know, they won't buy the old stuff. Mm-hmm. So we already are seeing the secondhand marketing, re-commerce marketing numbers grow again. Through the millennials, and this market is expected to grow to $51 billion dollars by 2028.
Wow.
The re-commerce market, yes. So unless all these retailers find their path to responsible manufacturing and sourcing, you know, they will be left out.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, it's good that fast fashion brands are making all these declarations. On the other hand, I doubt if there's enough structure going into the whole making of it,
or if it's even possible. I mean, how are you going to disrupt your own business model without messing things up? You know, especially businesses at that scale.
Yeah, I think sustainability is a very big word. But responsible production, I think takes the pressure a little bit off, because we can be responsible, so we can do things better every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that even is progress. But
sorry to interrupt.
No, when we go with the big thing, you know, sustainability just becomes too much, even for the consumer, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even from a consumer perspective, there's things that can be done. Just don't buy as much as you do. Just buy less for now. Give the world some time to recover as a consumer perspective. Spend your money on products that are actually not just speeding up the cycle of, you know, pretty much the I'm gonna feel horrible saying this, but the earth's doom, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the consumers have a responsibility to shop responsibly as well.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
We have to provide this information to the consumers, for manufacturers or brands, the whole stakeholder family of the fashion industry have to provide this information to the consumer. And then the consumer has to act responsibly and make better decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So that the whole supply chain can move into, you know, more ethical and responsible.
It's forced, pretty much. It's forced by the marketplace and by the consumers to do
it
something.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes.
No, I agree with you. Well, I mean, I could talk about this topic forever. I'm so interested in sustainability. I think that it's a topic. It's one of those topics that everybody that is kind of involved in the fashion industry in whatever way, maybe if you're not even somebody that's established, but even somebody that wants to start, you have to educate yourself on sustainability. It's almost like a moral duty at this point. So I could talk about this forever. But I do want people listening to have some sort of direction, because a lot of people that listen to me are people that are interested about starting their own fashion businesses or starting their own careers in the industry, something, but they're people starting out. So if there are people that are interested in developing a brand or developing a business that follows these sustainable guidelines, they want to do it responsibly, but how can they actually start building those partnerships with people that are manufacturers going to be able to support those visions?
First of all, it's very important to have a guideline. And mm-hmm. I think the best guideline currently is the Sustainable Development Goals. There are a couple of very good Coursera courses open online for free that whoever wants to start having a guideline can go online and take a look. I think the Ellen MacArthur Foundation's reports are amazing, again, sources to kind of dwell and have a better idea on what's happening and how can they originate their brands and their manufacturing processes. So those would be the good guidelines to look into. And it all starts with fiber. So it all starts with design, how to put a product together. So that's the initial step. And then, you know, I mean, I would advise them to look out for the responsible manufacturers.
Is it a group of sustainable, responsibly approved manufacturers or something like that they could like sort of follow?
The Sustainable Apparel Coalition has what's called the Higindex. So Higindex is something that is becoming kind of like the benchmark of the industry. So if you go online on Sustainable Apparel Coalition, you will get a good understanding of, you know, manufacturers who are producing responsibly. And again, as the whole supply chain becomes more transparent, we will see also designers and up and coming brands make better decisions into the supply chain. So, you know, definitely the Sustainable Apparel Coalition website is a good source, as well as again the Ellen MacArthur Foundation website is good, and Cradle to Cradle is another platform that introduces not only just fashion but from all other industries companies who are producing responsibly through the Cradle to Cradle application. So the Cradle to Cradle has the design incubated into the whole manufacturing process, and it's open source. So the products that get the Cradle to Cradle certification actually can reveal their the way that the product is made, all the details of the processes as open source.
Awesome.
So that would be good to look at as well.
Wow, that's just money right there. That's very valuable. I'm going to check it out myself after this call. And there's one more thing before, because I don't want to, I mean, as I said, I wish I can have you here sometime again, because I feel there's so much we could talk about when it comes to this topic. You mentioned that a lot of sustainability starts with the fabric if you want to build a business that's a little bit more responsible. So is there any sort of fabrics that somebody starting out should try to limit themselves to make the integration of this responsible processes easier?
Yeah, they can look into recycled cotton, recycled poly. I mean, I would not advise poly at all, but if you have to use some kind of poly, at least use recycled poly and certified recycled poly. Wood pulp, again, certified wood pulp, Tencel, is a very good fiber to use. Levi's has just launched their cottonized hemp. So like hemp that can act like cotton, all the natural fibers, as well as natural dye processes. So dyeing, you know, is of great importance because there's so many chemicals used, and those chemicals most of the time, yes, end up in the wastewater. So that would be very interesting to kind of educate, you know, yourself if you're a designer, if you're starting up your business, how that fabric has been dyed. That's a good, very good question to ask as well.
Wow. So many valuable information there, right? I really can't thank you enough for all of this.
Oh, thank you very
much. We still haven't wrapped up though. I'm still not, you're still not getting rid of me. I like to end up my episodes with something, especially this sort of episode, because they're very emotionally heavy. And they should be, because in a way these conversations are for a lot of people a reality check of the problem that we have in front of us, and it's not a problem that we brush under the table. So just to end the episode with a little bit more of a positive vibe, I guess, so that they actually want to, you know, watch my next episode, which they will, because this episode was incredible, by the way, I'll do two questions instead of one, because I think there's still so much value people could get. If you could give one piece of advice to somebody that's starting their fashion brand, they want to do it responsibly, what would that most important advice that you'd give them would be?
I would say be an eco activist. You know, just be inspired by nature so that you can actually keep nature, and be brave, because, you know, I mean, fashion is a great industry. It's great. It's colorful. Again, like I said, it's emotional. It's emotional. We reach people with emotions through fashion. It's something, it's beauty, you know? So we can kind of relay all this amazing insight through the product. It's like enchanted objects. So, you know, it's like bespoke apparel, you know, all of these ideas. This is possible. It's emotional. So I would advise them to be an eco-activist.
Amazing. Awesome. Love it, Ebru. And one more, and this is pretty much the same question, but if you had to go back to when you started in the industry, what would be the best piece of advice that you'd give yourself?
I think I would have not made a different choice. But I would definitely have been more courageous, reaching out to, I would say, global partners, which I am trying to do right now. So because I think, again, fashion is a great network, and there are a lot of people who are trying to empower a lot other more. And we can do so much through fashion. It's a great industry. So I would have started kind of like my own path. I should have started my own path before. That would have been the advice I would give myself.
Awesome. So go with what you want to do, and just do it, pretty much. Love it, Ebru. Well, again, I know I've thanked you like 10 times already in this episode, but I'm going to
I thank you.
I really loved having you here, and I really hope I can have you here some other time.
If you want to learn even more about how you can start your own fashion brand, make sure you follow me on YouTube at Esteban Julian. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Future of Fashion Business. Make sure you subscribe to listen to our future episodes.